members, 1 o'clock having arrived, and they call the March 2nd, 2021 meeting of the Taxes Committee to order under rules 10.01, which deals with remote hearings. And with that, Ms. Griska, if you would please take the roll.
Marquardt.
Present.
Marquardt, present. Liz Lagarde.
Present.
Liz Lagarde, present. Davids.
Davids, present.
Davids, present. Abaje.
Present.
Abaje, present. Carlson.
Carlson, present.
Carlson, present. Detmer.
Detmer, present.
Detmer, present. Garofalo.
Present.
Garofalo, present. Gomez.
Gomez, present.
Gomez, present.
Gomez, present.
Her present.
Her present.
Her present. Her toss.
Her present. Her toss.
Excused. Representative
Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. McDonald. McDonald.
McDonald.
Miller.
Miller.
Miller, present.
Miller, present.
Miller, present.
Moran.
Moran is present.
Moran, present. Martinson.
Present.
Martinson, present. Robbins. Robbins. Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Schultz.
Present.
Schultz, present. Stevenson.
Present.
Stevenson, present. Swazinski. Swazinski. Joachim.
Present.
Joachim, present. McDonald.
McDonald, present.
McDonald, present. Robbins. Swazinski. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Griska. We do have a quorum. And with that, we're going to move to the February 25th, 2021 minutes. Representative Les Lagarde, have you looked those over?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Representative Les Lagarde moves approval of the February 25th, 2021 minutes of the Taxes Committee. Any discussion, comments? Seeing none, if you would unmute temporarily as we take the vote. All those in favor of those minutes, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Say nay. The motion does prevail. The February 25th, 2021 minutes of the Taxes Committee are approved. Members, I want you to make note of the referral memo that went down to the Property Tax Division of March 1st, 2021. We are now to the first bill on the agenda. It's House File 1234. Representative Becker Finn, and before we go, Representative Hertas and Swazinski are present. So with that, could we have someone that would move House File 1234?
So moved.
Representative Joaquin moves to lay over House File 1234 for possible inclusion. Representative Becker Finn, welcome to the committee. And well, back to your committee, and please present your bill.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. I miss you guys. I miss Tax Committee, so I'm glad to be back this year with this bill. I actually was really excited because it's House File 1234. So that's how I remember the House File number for this one. So this is updating our statute about the student loan tax credit. And as members might remember, I talk a lot about how important it is to keep in mind that folks right now have really huge amounts of tax, student loan debt that students now and folks even into their 30s, 40s, 50s are carrying with them well into their adult years. And it really has an impact on people's ability to buy homes, to pay for daycare, all those other things that we want folks to be spending money on. And so what this bill would do is two things. Currently, our student loan tax credit has a marriage penalty for folks who are filing jointly when they both have student loan debt. And so this would fix that so that there would no longer be a penalty for folks who are filing jointly. And then secondly, which I think is really important, is making this tax credit refundable. And important to note that it would only be refundable up to $500. It's never going to be more than that. And it's for incomes. You'd have to have a high enough income that you would, you know, be able to qualify for that to be refundable. And finally, I will note that it's, according to Department of Revenue, this would impact around 14,700 returns with an average impact of $315 back in the pockets of folks who are paying their student loan debt. So that is House File 1234, and happy to take questions.
Thank you very much, Representative Becker Finn. Before we take any questions, the revenue estimate on that is for this biennium $9.3 million, and then $9.7 million into the next biennium, basically going $4.6 million to $4.9 million. So is there
can't hear you.
That would I hear I'm breaking up a little bit. So is there any one from Zoom to testify for or against? If not, Representative Becker Finn, any last comments?
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will also note that I would assume if other things go differently at the federal level, some folks will not have quite as much student loan debt. And so it's possible that the cost to the state would actually be lower in the future if something were to change at the federal level with student loan forgiveness. So I just want to keep that in mind as well. And would thank you for your support and looking at including this in the final bill this year. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. So Representative Joachim renews her motion to lay over House File 1234 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Thank you very much, Representative Becker Finn. All right, we're going to move now to House File 1285. It is the Department of Revenue Policy and Technical Bill. And I will move that for possible inclusion, House File 1285. And members, this is to be technical in nature. It's an annual bill that the Department of Revenue, as they scour through the statutes, come up with technical and policy changes. What has always been the case with this bill is that if there are any concerns, is that we note that and we do not proceed putting that in the final omnibus bill until, at least for the most part, until there is some agreement. And I think for the in this bill, primarily probably the only area of I guess where we've had some concerns in the past is the partnership audits. And that was a bill passed in 2015 by the federal government. It changed the laws in which partnerships were audited, kind of setting up one set of rules and moving to the audit to the partnership level rather than the individual level. So that's very clear that there will still probably be some concerns on. But with that, I'm going to turn it over to the Department of Revenue to present the bill. And with that, we've got Ms. Bears. If you would introduce yourself, and thanks for being in the committee today.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joanna Behrs, and I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I want to thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to present the bill today. As many of you know, our mission at the department is working together to fund Minnesota's future. Together is the most important word in our mission. We know we cannot do our work without you and your staff. Every year, we host a walkthrough of our policy and technical proposals for members and staff. We usually host it at the department, but this year was a little different and we hosted it virtually. This event was a huge success and we want to thank everyone for their participation and their time. We appreciate your expertise and your feedback we received. Your partnership is invaluable to us. Thank you. We also want to thank the 100 plus stakeholders that attended our stakeholder walkthrough. We appreciate and value their partnership and their feedback as well. Throughout this session, we continue to work with stakeholders if there are questions about our proposals. Specifically, we continue to work with stakeholders on the partnership proposal. We are hopeful we will find an acceptable administrative solution this year. One of the strategies to achieve the department's vision is that we are listening to our customers to identify and develop improvements to the revenue system. While working with the customers, we often notice items in the tax code that could be clarified, updated, or corrected. These items may be small, but are important to ensure clarity and effectiveness in the tax code. Now, Mr. Chair, as you start to put your omnibus bill together, if there are questions or issues that arise, we'd appreciate the opportunity to work with you to find solutions or answers to any questions that you may have. Again, thank you for the opportunity to present and discuss this bill. And at this time, I would turn over to my colleague, Margaret Reisner. She's one of our attorneys who will walk through Article 1 with you. Thank you.
They will do each the section. So, Ms. Reisdorf, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Margaret Reisdorf. I'm an attorney with Minnesota Department of Revenue, working in the income tax area. And I'm going to start going through Article 1. And the provisions regarding income and corporate franchise tax. So the first proposal in Section 1 modifies the state's composite filing statute. That's found in Section 289A.08 sub 7, paragraph J. The change specifically is on lines 3.5 through 3.6 in the, if you're looking at the PDF online. And all it does is it updates cross-references to that statute for foreign income provisions that were enacted in 2019. This provision is effective retroactively, and again, just provides cross-reference. Section 2 amends our state's withholding statute, Section 290.92. And you'll find changes in Section 2, Sections 5 through 12, and 14 relating to this proposal. Now this proposal does two things. One thing is substantive. The substantive piece is in Section 10, and that change can be found on page 12, starting on line 8. In that provision, we are updating our withholding statute to allow Minnesota taxpayers to be able to withhold income tax based on state definitions. In 2019, we enacted our own state dependent exemption, standard deduction, itemized deductions, and other exemptions. And this allows them to be able to withhold based on those definitions and not be limited to federal definitions. The remaining changes in this bill are simply cross-reference. When the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was enacted, there was a vocabulary change. Withholding used to refer to withholding exemptions. Now it refers to withholding allowances. And so we've updated our statute accordingly, so that when a Minnesota resident is applying for a job and filling out their withholding both for federal and state, they'll see a continuity between both. Moving on to Section 3. Section 3 amends our dependent exemption, which is found at Section 290.0121, and it removes redundant language on line 4.31. That language rounding is already addressed in the sentence above, as well as in 270C.22. So this repeat language is just being repealed. This is a repeat provision from last year's technical and policy bill. Similarly, we are in section 4, starting on line 5.5, we are amending our item, our state statute 290.0122, which provides our definitions for itemized deductions. We're updating our losses definition to just be more, to provide more clarity. It amends the statute to make clear that casualty and theft losses that are defined under Federal Internal Revenue Code Section 165 that are allowed as an itemized deduction for state purposes have to be an actual loss and not reimbursed by insurance or otherwise, but that federal limitations with regard to losses occurring in disaster areas does not apply to Minnesota. Okay. Next, I'll move, since the remaining sections here are all those technical changes relating to withholding, I'll move to section 13, which begins on page 14, line 26. This provision also amends our state's withholding statute, and it allows, it's going to require payors of annuities, pensions, or deferred income that's paid on either a periodic or non-periodic basis to withhold income tax on those payments. It allows taxpayers to opt out of them, but the default will be to require withholding. This provision will be effective beginning for taxable years beginning after December 31st, 2020. And then the final section of Article 1 provides a technical change that was also provided in our prior technical bill last year. Starting on page 16, line 17, we're making a technical change to the special limited adjustments. This is section 290.993. If you remember when the state conformed during 2019 to the Internal Revenue Code, as that code existed through the end of 2018, many Minnesota taxpayers had already filed returns. And so this provision was added to hold them harmless. At that time, it was intended to include specifically estates and trusts in that statute, and that's simply what we've done here. We have administered this statute as accordingly. So this is no substantive change, but this just makes that technical change. And that concludes Article 1. Next, I believe, is my colleague, Melissa Tape, who will take you through Article 2 regarding the partnership tax. Thank you.
Very good. Members, I'm going off camera right now because I've been told I have not been coming across very good because of the technical difficulty. So we'll try this. But any questions on that first Article 1? All right, see none.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Swedzinski.
You would not see our majority saying that you were coming off not as chairman, sir.
I'm sorry. Oh, no. So I'm just going off camera right now. Thank you. Is Representative Swedzinski, I don't know if I caught what you were saying.
Oh, Mr. Chair, we were. You said you were not coming off well. I think you're doing a great job. Oh,
I see. Representative Swedzinski, thank you very much. I didn't even catch that. Thank you much. All right, Ms. Tape, please proceed and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Melissa Tape. I'm an attorney with the Department of Revenue at the State of Minnesota. Mr. Chair and members, I will be covering Article 2 of the department's bill dealing with partnership tax. As many of you heard testimony on the department's partnership proposal in the past, I will begin by highlighting the differences in the language from the department's 2020 proposal and the current 2021 proposal. Then I will give an overview of the 2021 proposal you have in front of you. First, a clerical error was corrected in Section 4 to pluralize federal adjustments report, as the pluralization is the format in the definition section found later in Section 8. Next, some changes were made to the language to incorporate the Multi-State Tax Commission, or MTC model, amendment language that was adopted by the MTC in November of 2020. Those amendments are made to address negative federal adjustments arising from partnership audits or administrative adjustments resulting in a refund. As a general overview of the 2021 language you have in front of you, this article addresses changes in federal law that were made as part of the Bipartisan Budget Act of 2015. As a result, the Minnesota statutes must be amended to account for the new federal laws regarding partnership audits. Specifically, the new federal process of issuing tax orders at the partnership or entity level rather than at the partner level. The reporting sections for general federal audit assessments, amended returns, refund claims, and assessment in current Minnesota law will be amended to incorporate new definitions. But there will be no substantive change to the way Minnesota administers its law in those instances. This proposal maintains the longstanding statutes of limitations following federal adjustments that govern not only partnerships, but many other tax types, including individuals, corporations, states, fiduciaries, and others. The main focus of the proposed language addresses adjustments resulting from the new federal centralized partnership audit regime. Minnesota ordinarily imposes filing and payment requirements on taxpaying partners when they have either filed amended return or have received an assessment of tax from the IRS. But a federal tax on the partnership audit adjustments may now be assessed and paid at the partnership entity level without the taxpaying partners filing amended returns or receiving assessments. Therefore, Minnesota needs additional authority as well as a process for assessing state taxes on federal partnership entity level audit adjustments. This is accomplished through the proposed language by adding a new statute section providing the requirement that taxpayers report federal adjustments at the partnership level. This proposal requires partnerships to pay the same Minnesota tax following a federal audit adjustment that each partner would have paid had they correctly reported their tax liability on their originally filed return. With that, I will take you through the components of Article 2. Sections 1 through 7 and 10 through 15 make various conforming changes to correct cross-reference to the Revenue Agent Report or RAR statute throughout the administrative chapter and the changes in other sections. Additionally, the new definitions in Section 8 are incorporated into the RAR statute sections. In Section 8, you will notice that there are 19 new definitions added as a part of this article. These definitions are codified in a new section that is in front of the state partnership statute as they relate primarily to the new partnership adjustments. But there are some additional general definitions that included that relate to the reporting of general liabilities following adjustments by the Internal Revenue Service. Primarily, the new definitions relate to specific types of partners and specific types of partnerships, and those definitions are to facilitate a statute that contemplates reporting for complex tiered partnership structures. Section 9 codifies a new section at 289A382. There is a state partnership representative who is able to make decisions that are binding on the partnership as to state tax matters. This is generally going to be the same person as the federal partnership representative, though taxpayers will be able to name a different state partnership representative if they wish. The next two subdivisions get to the substantive reporting requirements for partnerships with entity level federal adjustments. There is basically a two-track system consisting of a default and then an option. The default track is that partnerships will continue to be required to do what they already are required to do under current Minnesota law, which is that when there is an adjustment made at the federal level, they will report those changes within 180 days to their direct partners. Within 90 days, they will also file amended composite income tax returns. The default system is if the partner receives a federal assessment, it will act as an information reporting conduit that is similar to the way partnership law has operated in the state to date. The second track is an election that the partnership is allowed to make at the state level under subdivision 3. If the partnership makes an election to pay the liability at the partnership or entity level, they will file a federal adjustments report within 90 days with the commissioner. And after 180 days, they will go through a calculation where they will determine how much liability the partnership should owe at the state level. What you'll see as part of the amendment is that there is an exemption here where you're not allowed to make an election if you're reporting an adjustment that's made after an administrative adjustment request, or if you have a unitary corporate partner. That is because there are concerns about the way that apportionment would work in those situations, that we might be opening up a planning opportunity for people who use the election. So in those two areas, the election is not allowed. The fourth subdivision provides that for each partnership entity that is in a tiered structure, if the top partnership tier chooses not to make the election and they elect to act as an information reporting conduit by sending information to the next tier, the second partnership down the line can still make the election to pay at the entity level. This way, in each tier, partnership management may decide that they would like to utilize the election in order to ease administrative burden. Each time you go down one of the tiers, it requires information reporting both to the state and to the individual partners. And then each of those individual partners has a filing obligation following that. The provisions of this article are effective retroactively to account for both those partnerships that are required to pay federal assessments at the partnership level, which became generally effective for taxable years beginning after December 31, 2017, as well as for those partnerships that made an early opt-in election to be assessed at the partnership level before the general effective date for taxable years beginning after December 31st, 2017. This concludes Article 2, and Kelly McCormick of the department will walk you through Article 3. Thank you.
Ms. Tape, thank you so much. Members, we're going to have time to, you know, before this goes into the omnibus bill, if you have comments or thoughts, and this is Article 2 is probably the one that will gain the most attention here, that, you know, we want to get to something that, you know, works for everyone. So this isn't the last day we'll hear of this, but are there any members that have any questions for Ms. Tape on Article 2 on the partnership tax? All right. With that, we're going to move to Article 3 on property taxes. Ms. McCormick, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. For the record, my name is Kelly McCormack, and I am an attorney at the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And as you say, I will be walking you through Article 3, which is the property tax article. Section 1 of this article would combine two reports of the Board of Assessors, one of which is sent to the governor and the other to the legislature, into one single report, as these reports contain duplicative information. The combined report would be submitted in October of even years, which would be the next date either of these reports is required to be completed. Section 2 would remove the fee for the Board of Assessors that is authorized. It is authorized to charge by statute for retention of the assessor training records. The board has moved this to electronic files for assessing training records and no longer collects this fee. Sections 3 and 4 clarify that the construction date of a wind energy conversion system or a solar energy generating system is not altered if the system is replaced, repaired, or otherwise maintained or altered. These changes will make it clear to these taxpayers that their combination nameplate capacity determination will not be impacted by repairs to their system. Section 5 allows the commissioner to correct clerical errors to the notification of tax that is sent to the county auditor and of the owner of a solar energy generating system until December 31st. This change will align the time period for correcting these clerical errors to the corresponding provision found within the Wind Energy Production Tax Statute. Section 6 clarifies that the powers and duties to be performed by the county assessor and the city assessor in places where, in jurisdictions where there's both a city assessor and a county assessor. Section 7 would provide that licensed assessors must complete 30 hours of education on Minnesota laws and administration over the four-year licensing cycle, rather than requiring assessors to complete the same training during a week-long course, which is currently known as the PACE course. This will provide more flexibility for assessors, as well as allow the department to provide more timing, timely training if there are changes to the laws during the licensing cycle. Sections 8, 9, and 11 the statutes referencing the payment in lieu of taxes for the Lake Vermilion Sudan Underground Mine State Park. They should have been amended to include these payments for the Lake Vermilion Sudan Underground Mine Park under Section 477A.17 at the time of enactment. This proposal adds references to that section to appropriately reference these PILT payments. And finally, Section 10 amends the statute to modify the mortgage registry tax exemption for mortgage loans that are made under a low or moderate income housing program to include mortgages that are assigned to a federal, state, or local government agency. This change will make it clear to those lenders that they are exempt from tax and will be able to file the mortgage without collecting the tax from the borrower at the time of closing. And this concludes Article 3. I'd be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. McCormick. And are there any questions on that property tax article? Seeing none, thank you very much. We're going to move to Article 4, Sales and Use Tax. Mr. Schultz.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome
Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ron Schultz. I'm a sales tax attorney for the Department of Revenue. I will be walking you through Article 4, the Sales and Use Tax article. Each of these proposals were in our policy and technical bill last year, so they may be familiar to some of you. Section one amends the June accelerated tax sales tax payment percentages and references to percentages so that they correctly match from paragraph B to paragraph C in the subdivision, providing clarification for those taxpayers with liabilities of $250,000 and above. Section two amends the liquor gross receipts tax in Chapter 295 to clarify by adding explicit language that a liquor retailer may, but is not required to, collect the liquor gross receipts tax from the purchaser and that the tax is excluded from the sales price for purposes of sales tax if separately stated on the receipt given to the purchaser. By adding those words to the liquor gross receipts tax provision, this proposed legislation will clarify the intent of the legislature in 2005, be consistent with the department's longstanding interpretation of the law, and more clearly align with the streamlined sales and use tax agreement and its rules concerning sales price. Section 3 relates to marketplace provider liability. Under current law, a marketplace provider is subject to audit on the retail sales it facilitates if it is required to collect and sales and use taxes and remit them to the commissioner. This proposal adds language to clearly indicate that a marketplace provider is deemed to be the retailer or seller of all or for all retail sales the marketplace provider facilitates. And this is a necessary clarification, given that most other provisions in the sales tax chapter use the terms retailer or seller when referring to the entity that is required to collect and remit the taxes. Additionally, this language will serve to clarify that a marketplace provider is considered to be in the business of selling goods of all kinds, and thus sales placed through a marketplace provider are considered sales made in the normal course of business and never an isolated or occasional sale. And Section 4 repeals language which requires local units of government whose local sales tax is administered by the department to pay for the costs of developing a new computer system for administering local taxes. This subdivision is unnecessary for a few reasons. First, the department never developed a standalone computer system just for administering local taxes. The department moved to an integrated tax system in 2008, meaning all tax types are handled by the same system, not just sales tax. And the department does not anticipate the development of a standalone system for sales tax. Also, subdivision one of the same section provides that if the commissioner agrees to collect a local tax, the local unit of government must agree that all direct and indirect costs of the department for collecting the tax and any other statewide indirect costs will be deducted from the amounts collected and paid to the local unit of government. And similarly, in a section in the sales tax chapter concerning the administration of local sales tax provides that before a local jurisdiction is paid local sales tax revenues, the commissioner is required to deduct any direct or indirect costs to administer, audit, and collect sales taxes. This concludes Article 4.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schultz. Any questions on Article number 4? Very good. I also want to mention that there was a letter that members have in their packets from the Council on State Taxation regarding the partnership article in the bill. Very good. We're going to move to Article 5, Special Taxes, and that looks like Mr. Jordan.
Good afternoon, Chairman Marquardt and committee members. Yes.
Welcome.
Oh, thank you. My name is Jim Jordan. I'm an attorney at the Department of Revenue, and I'll be walking you through the special tax section. So we'll obviously start with Section 1. This provision was in last year's policy technical bill, and it relates to Chapter 296A, which is the petroleum tax chapter. We're fixing just a very minor drafting issue from 2019. We're replacing the current text fuel dealer with the statutorily defined term special fuel dealer. To clarify, special fuel is basically any fuel other than gasoline. Examples are kerosene and jet fuel. Now on to Section 2. We're also going to deal with Section 7 because they're related. These proposals were also in last year's policy and technical bill. So Chapter 297F, which is the tobacco tax chapter, taxes two statutorily defined kinds of products. One is cigarettes and the other is tobacco products. The defined term tobacco products is basically all taxed tobacco products other than cigarettes and includes cigars, moist snuff, and vapor products. This proposal adds the words or tobacco products after the words cigarettes. So if you look at paragraph 5 in section 297F04, where the section 2 language is located, you will see that all other instances in which all other uses of the word cigarettes are followed with the words or tobacco products. The one instance in which or tobacco products does not follow cigarettes appears to be just an omission. This amendment adds the words or tobacco products to fix the omission and makes it consistent with the remainder of the paragraph. Section 7, which I mentioned is related, is also being changed to mirror Section 2 because there's a cross-reference. Now we'll move on to Section 3 and Section 6. They're also related, and they both involve similar fixes to accelerated payment provisions for Chapter 297F tobacco tax and Chapter 297G liquor tax. This is a technical amendment to changes made during the 2019 special session, and this change was also in last year's policy and technical bill. Generally, the purpose of these statutes at issue is to accelerate payment of June tax liabilities, and this amendment does a couple things. First, it removes references to calendar year 2020, since calendar year 2020 is no longer relevant to the payment and penalty determinations. And second, it restructures the subdivision to provide the same information in a way that ties the relevant calendar year more clearly to the percentage payment necessary to avoid the 10% late penalty. Now we'll move to Section 4 at line 49.5. Currently, tobacco retailers and subjobbers, which are middlemen that buy tax product and sell it to retailers, are only required to hold invoices for their wholesale purchases of cigarettes and tobacco products for 1 year, regardless of when the retailer or subjobber actually sells the product. Now, cigarettes have stamps that prove tax has been paid, but for other tobacco products, invoices are the best and most efficient way for the department to confirm tax has been paid. The invoices, therefore, are critical to DOR audits. Therefore, we propose requiring all retailers and subjobbers to keep invoices for 1 year or as long as the product is available for sale or in their possession, whichever is longer. Note that because some retailers and subjobbers may have already discarded invoices based on the current requirement to keep invoices for just 1 year, this section has an effective date of December 31, 2021. This gives retailers and subjobbers lead time to come into compliance. Now we'll move to the last special tax section, Section 5 at line 49.22. This was also in last year's policy and technical bill. And this amends the tobacco tax chapter, specifically Minnesota Statutes 297F.17 Subdivision 1, to remove unnecessary language that requires a notice of tax assessment be mailed to the post office address given on the return, even if the department is aware of a change of address. By making the deletion seen in Section 5, the generally applicable notice provisions found in 270C.33 Subdivision 8 will apply to tobacco taxes. These generally applicable notice provisions are more sensible. So after this change is made, instead of mailing notices to the address on the last return, the department will mail the assessment notice to the taxpayer's last known address or last known electronic mailing address. So that ends the special tax Article 5. Ready for questions, and then I think Margaret Reisdorf will return to present the next article.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Any questions on Article 5? Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick note. I've had several letters from constituents and others around the state who are vendors of vaping products, and they say that the proposed tax will really push them out of business. Can you comment on that, please?
Mr. Jordan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. I believe you're referring to proposals not in the policy and technical bill. I just want to make sure I'm understanding which proposal you're talking about. Probably in the governor's tax bill.
Representative Sandell, are you referring to the governor's tax bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Jordan. My mistake. Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions for Mr. Jordan? All right, we have one more article on miscellaneous. Ms. Reisdorf, finish it off. You're still muted. There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Margaret Reisdorf, and I'm an attorney with Minnesota Department of Revenue working in income tax. And there are two provisions in the miscellaneous section this year. The first makes a change to our cost of living adjustment. Back in 2019, the legislature amended our statutes to provide for change CPI and specific codified instructions regarding how cost of living gets adjusted. There was in paragraph D of that statute, so it's statute 270C.22, paragraph D, and in the legislation, it's online 52.3, there's a duplication of the word of the phrase year preceding. And so we're simply deleting that duplication in that provision. This proposal that is effective for property taxes payable in 2020 and rent paid in 2019. So it's retroactive. We're already administering this provision this way, but we're just removing it specifically in the bill. The second and final article of the bill, or final section of the bill, amends Section 270C.445, that is the department's paid preparer statute. And it amends it by prohibiting paid preparers from depositing client funds into the preparer's own bank account in order to clarify and address ways a refund can be paid to a taxpayer, namely by paper check or direct deposit. Specifically, this is on lines 53.15 and 53.20. This provision prohibits by taking control or ownership of the client's refund by any means, just simply updating that preparer statute. And that's the end of Article 6.
Thank you very much, Ms. Reisdorf. Any questions on Article 6? If not, we're going to move. We have one more testifier who signed up to testify, Mr. Fragnito.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Gino Fragnito, and I'm the Government Relations Director at the Minnesota CPA Society. And my testimony today is on some concerns we still have with the proposed changes to the partnership audit rules that are found in Article 2. And as Chair Marquardt mentioned, Minnesota does need to update its statutes to conform with the changes Congress passed back in 2015. And we've been working with the department for several years and have drafted some language we believe may be acceptable, but it is not yet included in House File 1285. So the changes would provide a streamlined process for both the department and the audited entity by allowing the entity to pay the assessments rather than pushing it out to each of the individual partners. And we have meetings scheduled with the department coming up, and we'll plan to continue the conversation and hope to have a resolution soon, Mr. Chair. And thank you for your time today.
Mr. Fragnito, thank you so much and for your work. And please keep me updated on how all of this comes about. Mr. Fragnito, we back in July special session, we had some language in our bill that dealt with partnership audits. How was that? Or I mean, was that something that seemed to be amenable to all parties, or
Yes, Mr. Chair, the language that was included in the bill back in July and August, I think, and even in September when we were discussing a tax bill was acceptable. It did not make the final cut in the October bill. And so that's where we're back having the conversation today.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Fragnito? If not, I'm going to turn it back over to Ms. Bears for any closing comments on House File 1285 and your work on this bill.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We just want to say thank you for allowing us to present today. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We're happy to answer anything that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. But this bill gets a lot of, this is a bill that doesn't get a lot of fanfare, but I hope that you are and can folks hear me or not right now?
We can hear you.
Okay.
You are cutting you can hear out. Last... It's very static.
I'm sorry. All right. I'm sorry for that. I don't know what's going on for sure today on my end, but I just want to thank the committee, the Department of Revenue for your work on this. I know there's a lot of time going through the statutes, finding redundancies, obsolete language, where there's inconsistency. And I know every time we put a new tax bill into law, there's things that aren't always caught on the first time around. So I really do appreciate the department and all the work you do, because I know there's a lot of work to all this. And so, as I've mentioned before, there will be more work on this before we put this into the omnibus bill. So I do again want to thank everyone for your work. So with that, I'm going to renew my motion to lay over House File 1285 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Members, that concludes our work for today. We will meet tomorrow. And then we will not meet on Thursday. That time will be given to the Property Tax Division. And next Tuesday, next week, I think it's probably next Tuesday, we'll have Representative Stevenson's bill on exempting taxes on the federal unemployment insurance that folks received. So members, with that, we will see you tomorrow. And Tax Committee, we are adjourned.